To defend Israel, you need the facts. That's why Kufi is launching a brand new online news and analysis show hosted by Kasim Hafiz called Kufi Weekly. Tune in on YouTube every Thursday to get the rundown on the latest events related to Israel and the Middle East. Subscribe to Kufi's YouTube channel, Official Kufi, to never miss an episode. And visit www.kufi.org/Kufi Weekly.
Anti-Semitism is everyone's problem. It's not just a Jewish problem.
Anytime there is prejudice or stereotype or singling out of a group based on their ethnic or religious identity, there's something very wrong here.
You're looking at the unraveling of the Arab-Israeli conflict, which dominated the landscape for many years. That conflict is now receding.
For Zion's sake, we must not be silent.
Hello and welcome to the Kufi Middle East Briefing Podcast. I am your co-host Kasim, and I am joined as ever by our inspiring co-host.
Wow, it's me? Or are you replacing me?
No, it's you. We didn't get sufficient applications to replace you. Yes. Look, I'm being kind and encouraging.
It's a slim pool, I get it. Well, I'm flattered anyway.
See, I try to be encouraging and it kind of stuns you to silence. That says a lot about my character, which is slightly disturbing. So pray for me, y'all, because I apparently need it.
Lift yes. him up this week in your prayers.
Welcome to the Kufi Middle East Briefing. How are you doing, Karina?
I'm good. Happy to be here, as always, with you.
Good. Thank you. It's a blessing. It really is. Anyway, moving swiftly on, we have another great episode for you in store. None of those words are in the correct order. We have another great episode in store
that
for you
we
today.
Do.
There we do. There we do. That we do. Wow. Anyway.
It's Sarit Zahavi of the yes. Alma Center.
Yes, we have a... We have a guest today, and it will give you some really great insights into the geopolitical security situation that Israel is faced with, especially on the northern border. So we yes. have that. We have a number of other things, some biblical inspiration. I know I change the name for that segment every week, but right now we're going to go to the news. So we will be back in maybe 8 to 7 seconds. Sound accurate?
Yeah, it's a good guess.
I mean, you took like 10 seconds to respond, but it's fine. We'll be back right after the intro music for the news. There we go. And we're back. Right. Welcome to the news. Did you miss us? I mean, you can't respond,
Oops.
So
I
won't know. I mean, Karina's just doing her own thing right now, so it's fine. Well, we're recording a podcast, Karina. I don't know if you were aware, but...
Oh, is that what we're doing?
If you wouldn't mind, participating, that'd be hugely appreciated. All right, so news stories today. So I've got a few things that I want to talk about. So there was a Israeli couple who were arrested in Turkey because they took pictures of the presidential palace. I mean, it was pretty ridiculous, the whole situation. Again, really just Turkey. And we're going to talk about this a little on the interview. Turkey had for one time been very friendly towards Israel, but Turkey stands towards Israel, and Turkey itself has changed under Erdogan. But today it was announced that they had been, the couple had been released from prison and will be on their way back to Israel. So that's good. They called it a Hanukkah miracle.
That is really good news. Yeah. I think it's important that we bring up Turkey, and we'll touch on it with our guest in this episode. But it's something that I think a lot of people don't address, even in the pro-Israel community. It's kind of a taboo a little, because Turkey is still a NATO ally, and the waters are a little murky as far as where that's headed. So, I think that's a timely, obviously it's not a good story, but it's timely.
Right, no, for sure. And the situation with Turkey is complicated, like you said, because it being a NATO ally and because of previously good relations with Israel. But it is something that we definitely need to look into more, and maybe even something we should discuss in the future. But moving swiftly on, again, another news story which is relevant to the discussion we're going to be having shortly. So the IDF announced that it's going to be investing $1 billion new Israeli shekels into the IDF as it prepares for war in Lebanon and Syria. The story basically says that the IDF is set to invest $1 billion new Israeli shekels in combat training drills and exercises for reserve units in 2022 as it began preparations this month towards an operation against Hezbollah and pro-Iranian militias based in Lebanon and Syria. Okay. So what do you make of that?
I think it's newsworthy.
It's a little bit of stating the obvious. Yeah, it's a little bit of stating the obvious. Like, I get that.
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, those who are paying some attention, at least, you know that Hezbollah is a threat to Israel, know that they've been stockpiling missiles and rockets for quite some time, and they know that that's kind of an imminent and ever looming threat on the horizon. So it is worth saying that, you know, Israel is preparing for this in a very real way, but it's kind of like a wait and see situation.
Right. No, for sure. That's going to be, I don't want to say interesting because I don't think that's the right term, but I think when people listen to Sarit's interview, there are things that they will glean from it which will really connect the dots between that news story and the situation that's happening on that border. And the final news story I want to touch
for
on.
For sure.
So, Cannes News report. Maybe this is a very significant news story. So, Cannes News in Israel reported that Hamas has called on Justin Bieber to cancel his planned concert in Tel Aviv for October 13, 2022. Hamas has reportedly called on Bieber to boycott Israel altogether due to its crimes against the Palestinian people. So, Hamas and the Biebs.
Pressure's on for the Biebs.
Right. Like, I don't even know what to say. I feel
they're very, they're in the know. They're culturally relevant. They're staying, they're kind of staying hip with knowing what's going on. Wow.
Reaching out to Justin Bieber. I mean, I don't, it sounds like a comedy sketch almost. Like, genuinely, it sounds like a comedy sketch. But here we are. We have Hamas.
This is what we're living with, yeah.
Asking Justin Bieber to boycott Israel. I don't really have anything else. I think he's going to do the right thing and not listen to a terrorist group, hopefully. I mean, that's the hope. Don't listen to a terrorist group that likes murdering people. That's always, you know, the way to go. So hopefully he does Canada proud.
Well, that would be
I mean, there's not much, like, what can we say? It's Justin Bieber. There literally is nothing we can say. So I think that is a good point to end the news for today. Maybe end the show altogether. Let's just wrap it up. Like, that is going to be the last thing.
It's over.
We're going to share. But luckily or unluckily for everyone, our listeners, we'll be right back after this word from Kufi.
Do you want to do more for Israel and the Jewish people? Christians United for Israel is excited to announce that a generous donor has offered to match every gift we receive until December 31st, up to $500,000. From now until the end of the year, your gift of any amount will be doubled, accomplishing twice as much for Zion's sake. And if you give before December 10th, you will receive a custom Kufi Christmas ornament made in Southern Israel, hand-painted with the inscription, "Blow the trumpet in Zion." This keepsake is a reminder to respond to the trumpet sound and rally on behalf of Israel and the Jewish people. Go to www.kufi.org/end-of-year to give your best gift today.
All right, well, coming up, first off, that was a lovely message from Kufi. But second, coming up, we have our guest today, who is Sarit Zahavi, and she is an amazingly intelligent, insightful, and caring mother of five who started the Alma Center. And we're going to be talking to her about life in Northern Israel and the threats on Israel's northern border. So I think it's going to be a good time. And yes, we had a good conversation.
And she has quite the bio. She's definitely, like, I was very impressed. Like, just the insights, both on a strategic level, but also on a human level, I think were really helpful.
Yeah. Well, and she was just very able to condense and kind of sift through all these, I mean, because there are so many things to say about that region and that issue, and just kind of give us a top view, right, what's most important takeaways.
Agreed.
With that, let's head straight into the interview. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, Sarit. This is going to be a pleasure, I'm sure. So first things first, you're new to us, Kasim and I, and you're new to our listeners. So talk to us about what you do with the Alma Center. How did that come about? What's the purpose of your organization?
So Alma's mission is actually to fight the delegitimation of Israel, or to fight the delegitimation, I'm saying that correctly?
Yeah, delegitimization, we got you.
Delegitimization, I'll say it again. The mission of ALMA is to fight the delegitimization of Israel around the world by providing accessible and relevant knowledge and information and putting things in proportions, meaning producing knowledge specifically on Israel's security challenges on its northern borders, Syria, Lebanon, Hezbollah, the Iranian involvement in the region, and making sure that this knowledge is accessible to English speakers outside of Israel or those who are coming to Israel. We are a research and education center. We meet the groups at the border when they come to Israel. We show them around, and we also publish a lot of reports about what's going on in the countries along Israel's northern borders.
Wow, that's really fascinating and really important at this moment. So I was just reading a little bit about you, and you have quite a family history. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that plays into your passion for Israel? What personal ties do you have to your work that you do?
First of all, my work, it's not my work, it's my life mission. I established ALMA a few years ago after I left the army for medical reasons, and I wanted to continue to do something meaningful for the state of Israel. And I felt that there is lack of knowledge, but a lot of thirst to know about what is happening here. Personal story of my family, yes, my father was born in Damascus and came here before the state of Israel was born in 1946. Actually had to leave Damascus because of the violence over there. To give you a small anecdote, one of the main incidents that made my grandmother send away two children in the middle of the night and tell them, go with this person, he will take you to Israel, is because of the murder of the teacher. His name was Franco, an incident that shocked the Jewish community in Damascus. Wow. And just last week, my father had the privilege, he's 87 years old, to meet the nephew of this teacher.
Wow.
And actually to close the circle about this incident that he witnessed. And afterwards, all the schools were closed and everything. From my mother's side, my grandmother of my mother's side was born in Hebron, and she was expelled from Hebron in 1929 after the massacre. And again, you know, this combination of very much rooted in the region and yet growing up completely as an Israeli with all the DNA of wars in Israel during the 50s, 60s, and 70s. All these stories of my parents, I guess, definitely shaped my own personality as someone who desire to contribute and to dedicate his life to my homeland.
Right. Well, that's interesting and that's powerful. I like that you made that distinction between your work and your life mission, because I think for a lot of our listeners and for our staff, defending Israel, supporting the Jewish people is a life mission for them and for us. So with that, we come to kind of the meat of what we want to talk to you about, which is the threats on Israel's northern border. So some of our listeners might not be as familiar with this issue, definitely not as you, but not as others either. So just in a nutshell, summarize, kind of a top view of what are the threats on Israel's northern border?
Actually, it's pretty simple. You know, I can talk about it for hours and explain all the complexities, and there are many, but actually it's pretty simple. Hezbollah is holding 150,000 rockets almost everywhere in Lebanon that are targeting Israel, hidden in civilian infrastructure, homes, hospitals, schools, just neighborhoods, whatever. And these rockets can cover almost, with their range, almost all of Israel. This is a huge amount of rockets. Most of them are inaccurate, but it's not about the quality. It's about the amount. It means that in a scenario of war, like what we witnessed, for example, with Gaza last May, it's not going to be 50 rockets at the same time to Tel Aviv, like what we've seen with Hamas. It will be a few hundreds of them at the same time, and it will be around 2,000 rockets a day. So even if Iron Dome has 90% of success, it's not enough. It means that around 200 or 100 will hit the ground and may cause a lot of damage. And that's the main problem when we speak about the north. Of course, there are on top of that, there are other threats that were developed in the past decade by the Iranian presence in Syria, the drones capabilities of the Iranians, the missiles that are not positioned only in Lebanon, but also in Syria, in Iraq, and even in Yemen. And the combat squads, combat brigades that are well experienced from the war in Syria, that are actually Lebanese Hezbollah brigades that were trained to enter into Israel in times of war, whether it's above or below the ground, and to try to take over areas in the Galilee. Of course, I don't believe that they will occupy the Galilee or liberate the Galilee or whatever, but they will definitely make the IDF more busy in defending communities while rockets are being falling all around Israel. So that's the main problem is the rockets. And of course, behind it is Iran. So we are no longer dealing with just a terrorist group. We are dealing with a terrorist army that is using civilians and that plans to launch missiles from civilian population towards civilian population. And behind this organization, there is Iran. There is a state, a sovereign state that has the money, though all the economic problems of Iran, has the money and the ideology to provide to Hezbollah.
Well, that's thank you for that explanation. It really paints a complete picture of what's happening. So one of the challenges, I think, in the United States or anywhere outside of the region is we're so far removed, we see it almost as abstract. So when we see reports of, 1,000 rockets being fired at Israel, for example, we can process that, but we don't connect with it on a human level. So the people who live in the north of Israel, on Israel's northern border, how are their lives affected on a day-to-day basis? Because, that's what we sometimes skip over with the endless news cycles. We see statistics, we see reports, but we don't actually hear about the human life being affected, especially when it comes to Israel. So if you could give us some insight into that, that'd be fantastic.
Look, the life in northern Israel, in opposed to the life in the south, in the past almost 16 years since the previous war between Israel and Hezbollah, were normal. We had some incidents of rocket launching, infiltration, I can't say that we are living under fear in the daily lives. On the contrary, I love the Galilee. I raise my children in the Galilee, and they feel very safe to go outside in the middle of the night, including inside the nearby our village. Our specific area in the Western Galilee is the, when you compare, for example, the riots in May, this area, we had no riots, just a little bit of demonstrations, which are not a problem, of course. And we truly have a normal life and even better than normal, if something, if something like that exists, with our Arab neighbors and friends over here in the Galilee. And at the same time, all of us adults know that we live under a great danger. That we have 10, I know as a mother, me and my husband, we raise our 5 children over here in the Galilee. We know that we have 10 seconds to run for shelter. And actually it's impossible. And not in all the homes that were built in the Galilee, there are shelters. In some of the places, the homes were built before the legislation to build shelters as part of the home in 91. So people have to run to public shelters, which are even far away. There are many communities that are next to the border, meaning that the fence of the community is the same fence as the border. So they have zero. I have 10 seconds. That's a long time. They have none to run for shelter. So there is kind of a gap between the, you know, the daily atmosphere and the, and what we know in our state of mind. And sometimes this peacefulness is being violated by here and there a rocket incident or something that happens, like what happened last August while Hezbollah launched 19 rockets at the same time. Right. They burned an area which is pretty big. You drive and drive and drive and you see all the mountain to your left burned. Nobody knows about that. Hmm. And one of the rockets fell next to a mall in northern Israel. Nobody knows that. That's pretty scary. We are trying not to pass this fear to the children, but as parents, we know. And of course, we, as any Israeli and any mother in Israel, we all know that we raise our children, but at the age of 18, they are going to the army. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and, and here I stop. I don't want to talk about it.
Well, I think it's very interesting that you, and I appreciate it, you know, from your perspective that you're making a distinction between what people deal with in southern Israel and your situation in northern Israel. But to our ears, to American ears, it still sounds horrific. Obviously, you don't want to embrace fear, but that constant sense of danger or knowing that there's not really a secure place for some of those people in those communities to go, it's hard to live with. So that, I think, helps, I think, us and our listeners just paint a picture for really what we're talking about. We're not just talking about, you know, an abstract, like Kasim said, army somewhere that might attack. We're talking about human lives and daily fear and constant sense of danger. So I would appreciate that. Going a little bit deeper, you've talked to us about kind of an overview. What are the major threats that could come down the line or that are building now? Recently, we've seen some countries pull their ambassadors from Beirut, from Lebanon, basically recognizing, you know, Hezbollah, and therefore, like you said, Iran is in control there. And then you've actually written some things, some research about Hamas that's building up their military presence in Lebanon. I thought that was all super interesting. So talk to us a little bit about those more, those details and what implications those have for Israel.
What we see around us when we look up north, and that's literally up north because I live 7 miles from the Lebanese-Israeli border. What we see, we see collapse states, including in Lebanon. We see Lebanon, we see Syria, and further than that, not on our borders, we see Iraq. Three collapse states that Iran is trying all the time to undermine and to take advantage and to create more and more influence as much as they can in these states. This is a problem because Israel, you know, the Israel interest is to see stable and sovereign states on its borders, states mm-hmm. that you can negotiate with, that you can get a peace agreement with, collaboration maybe. Each time I'm going to the border and I see on the other side, on the Lebanese and even in the Syrian, I see the traditional agriculture. I think that we miss so much from the fact that we do not collaborate with each other. Lebanon is getting closer and closer every day to a civil war, and nobody knows when it exactly it's going to collapse completely. But I think that the Lebanese themselves understand that they are on a very dangerous path.
Right.
In this kind of situation, and you also mentioned Hamas in Lebanon with a few hundreds of combatants that are being trained there, again, trying to gain rockets and rocket manufacturing capabilities inside Lebanon. This means, again, that you have no leadership that you can talk to on the one hand. And on the other hand, the leadership that does develop Hezbollah, which is the strongest player, still the strongest player in Lebanon, is a leadership that do not acknowledge the state of Israel and actually following the interests of Iran. Hezbollah, though all the criticism inside Lebanon against Hezbollah, is much stronger than it used to be, not only militarily, but also politically. It, in a very consistent way, it succeeded in pushing away its opponents, in bully them, frightening them, and intimidating them. And this is really a problem because, you know, for example, now there are negotiations about the maritime border. There is a small maritime dispute between Israel and Lebanon. And since energy was found, gas was found on the Israeli side, the Lebanese understand, rightfully, that there may be gas also on their side. Mm-hmm. And there is a dispute about a few hundreds of square kilometers. The Lebanese now increased that to more than that. And it's a lot of money. And if there was willingness for peace and willingness to recognize the existence of the state of Israel, we didn't have anything to worry about. We could have collaborated on that. But since we don't know if we sign an agreement where this is heading and who is the boss behind this kind of agreement, I truly don't know how can we collaborate on these kind of things.
Right. And that's really interesting. So, because especially with the situation in Lebanon, I feel that less people know what's going on, that whole situation, especially here in the US, just with conversations I've had. And you raise an important point about collaboration and there being peace. So I kind of want to pivot a little bit and talk about Turkey. I mean, a country for a long time, Israel had very good relations with Turkey. And that has dramatically changed because of what the Turkish leadership. But I wanted to talk about Turkey and its role in Syria and how is that impacting Israel, if at all?
No, I can't say that the involvement of Turkey in Syria is basically in northern Syria, in the Kurdish areas and in Idlib, which is the last, I wanted to say compound, but I'm not sure if it's the right term. The last area that is still under the control or not under the control of the government, let's put it this way. Right. And Turkey is military involved there, and with collaboration with what used to be rebels. Today, I can't call them rebels because most of them are organizations and groups with a radical Islamic tendency, some even connected to Al-Qaeda. I can't say it poses another challenge to Israel since it's far away. What I can say about Turkey is that the kind of involvement of Turkey in Syria reflects the general policy of Erdogan, which is a problem for Israel, which on the one hand And I'm not the only one, of course. Not only Israelis are saying that. Erdogan's desire to gain more and more influence in the region, in a sense that many in the Middle East, not necessarily Israelis, compared him to a sultan, that he wishes to be,
right,
to bring back the sultan and to have the same heritage and to gain more and more influence and involvement in the region. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, to become a crucial player in the international arena and not as a puppet of the Americans. And what he's actually doing is playing on both ways. Turkey is a member of NATO, has a leg in Europe, and yet when you look at the negotiations on Syria, you see the collaboration with Russia and with Iran. Though they don't share all the interests when we speak about that. And third, which is the most important when we speak about the relationship between Turkey and Israel, is the Erdogan self-perception, since he wants to be the sultan, or maybe as part of his willingness to portray himself as a sultan, as a Muslim leader. A Muslim leader that comes from the ideology, and Erdogan grew up on the ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood. This means that he is not very fond of Israel. Basically, before he became a prime minister and president, and he changed the face of Turkey. Turkey, 18 years ago, was much more secular, was much more open for Israelis. It is also open today, but you've seen what just happened in the last week. And I think the crisis in the negotiation, in the relationship, the crisis in the relationship between Israel and Turkey, first and foremost, derives from the dilemma of Erdogan himself, whether to follow the interest of Turkey, which is, yes, why not to have a relationship with Israel? It's beneficial economically. And on the other hand, why to have a relationship with Israel if it's not a country that we can identify with its ideology, with the way it treats to Palestinians, etc. And I think Erdogan is all the time walking between the drops, or, you know, jumping between this opinion to the other. And this is how our relationship looks like eventually.
That's good, I think. That is one thing that Kufai has been, and our boss would tell you that very firmly, Kufai has been very passionate about, that others haven't talked about as much as Turkey, and just kind of the increasing problem it may pose because of, like you said, Erdogan himself. So I think that's very interesting the way you framed it. So with that, it's been kind of, I think, a little heavy. So you are obviously all about education, and so are we. So our listeners want to get educated, and they want to know how they can support Israel and the Jewish people. So what would you tell them they can do, or how would you encourage them in kind of the work that we do?
I would say two things. First, don't let, I would use the term fake news, but I think it's much more than that. Don't let the lies win. And don't replace a multi-narrative world. Don't be mistaken between a multi-narrative world to a world without facts. We can definitely talk on various narratives. I was exposed much more in the past few years to the Palestinian narrative, which is not my narrative. It's really difficult for me to accept it, but I can totally today understand that it exists. And yet, facts are facts. And, you know, sometimes each narrative chooses the facts you want to talk about. And that's why it's so important that people outside of Israel will be capable of hearing the facts that each of the narratives is presenting, and not only one side. So on the one hand, it's facts that are missing in the puzzle that you're not exposed to, and on the other hand, it's also false information. And in order to combat that, I would suggest our listeners to doubt. To doubt me, to doubt anybody you listen to ask questions, to go and check, to search for the answers. Always try to ask, okay, what did he tell us and what he didn't or she didn't tell us. Don't give up on the facts, because what I see from the media outside of Israel, I see a lot of misinformation, lies, and again, half of the story. And the other half is missing. Personally, if you can share Alma's information, any other information that complete the puzzle, this is highly important to assist the state of Israel, because what we are experiencing is an information warfare. And it's very, very frustrating. We see sometimes what we see in New York Times, in The Guardian, in BBC, things that I personally know, that it's not the situation on the ground in northern Israel about communities in the Galilee, about the Golan, about Lebanon. And you don't even know how to begin from you know, presenting a completely different situation here. Come over to Israel now where COVID is beginning to, I hope it's beginning to disappear. I hope wish for all of us good health, and you will be able to come back and see for yourself, which is the most important. See how things look like when you come here and speak with Israelis from, by the way, all sectors and all sects.
Thank you so much for that, Sari. I think something that really jumped out to me was when you mentioned that it's an information war, and it really does seem like that. Just seeing it from the US, when you've been to Israel, when you've experienced it, you can see how much is missing. So we really appreciate you saying that, and we appreciate everything you do to make sure that the full picture is being put out there and that there are resources available for people. So thank you for that, and thank you so much for taking some time to speak to us today. So that is all we have time for today, unfortunately. Again, thank you so much for the insight you gave. I think it's going to be so helpful to our listeners, and hopefully we'll see you in Israel very soon and we're going to hear more from you on the ground.
Thank you very much. Hope to see you soon.
Okay, thank you so much. Take care. All right, so that was Sari Zahavi. Very grateful that she took some time to join us. It was nighttime in Israel, so we're very appreciative. And I think that was really, it was a great discussion. And look, for me, or both of us who are constantly keeping an eye on the region, I definitely got a lot out of that and learned quite a bit.
Definitely. I think she was so sweet, and I liked her perspective a lot.
No, definitely. Okay, so we are going to go to a quick word from Kufi, and we will be back after that. So, see you in a second.
Do you want the option to grow in your knowledge about Israel anywhere you go? There's an app for that. Get Kufi's newest resource, the Christians United for Israel app, today. Just search Kufi wherever you get your apps. Access Kufi's many resources from your phone. Get daily news updates, videos, short lessons about Israel's political, historical, and biblical significance, devotionals, and more. Plus, receive exclusive wallpapers for your phone and listen to Kufi's Middle East Briefing podcast straight from the app. Download today.
And welcome back. So now it is time for our biblical encouragement section. I remember what you called it.
Biblical encouragement, inspiration.
Right, because literally 30 seconds ago you told me it was biblical encouragement. So that's why I remembered.
Okay, don't expose yourself though.
I'll try not to. I'm just trying to be honest, keeping it authentic. So who do we have doing the biblical encouragement this week?
Always appreciate you being raw and real with us, Kasim. We have Lydia Yazzi, who is a longstanding Kufi regional coordinator. And she has really just a heart for God's word and for sharing it with others. So I think it's going to be very encouraging coming from her.
Okay, let's head over to that and we'll go for it, Lydia.
Hello, Kufi. My name is Lydia Yazzie. I am the West Coast Coordinator and BDS Task Force Coordinator with Kufi on Campus. And I get to bring to you the little devotion today. You know, I've been reading through the entire Bible in a year, and I just finished the book of Ezekiel. And something that stood out to me was this phrase that kept repeating over and over, often multiple times within the same chapter. Ezekiel keeps saying, "Then they will know that I am the Lord," or "Then you will know that I am the Lord." And he's talking about this, whether it's in judgment to the surrounding nations or to the nation of Israel, or whether it's for blessing to the nations or to Israel. But either way, he keeps saying that they may know that I am the Lord, and that's his purpose behind it. A couple examples. First of the judgment, Ezekiel 36:23 says, "And I will sanctify my great name, which has been profaned among the nations, which you have profaned in their midst. And the nations shall know that I am the Lord, says the Lord God, when I am hallowed to you before their eyes." And then an example of blessing is Ezekiel 37:14 that says, "I will put my spirit in you and you shall live, and I will place you in your own land. Then you shall know that I am the Lord, that I have spoken it and performed it, says the Lord." So either way, God is saying that you may know that I am the Lord is why I'm doing these things. And oftentimes he's saying this because right before he's claiming, "You have forgotten who I am, so you have to remember." That word "remember" has been so important to me lately. You know, it's so easy to take our eyes off of who God is and the grand purpose, and that not just that he's called us into this and has this great purpose for our lives, but he's called us in to the task of building his kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven, partnering with his son to bring him all the glory and honor and praise, so that one day when all nations and tribes will bow before him and honor God as he is meant to be honored. You know, Israel is such a physical representation of our spiritual walk with God. And just as we've been talking about how they have so many threats from the north and actually all of their borders, so too are we attacked, and we must always be on guard with our thoughts, with our identity, with our mindset, with our focus in life. You know, recently it's crazy. I myself, within 24 hours, found myself taking my eyes off God and focusing on materialism or financial security. And it set up my whole week. This was a couple weeks ago. It set up my whole week that at the end of it, I felt drained. I felt less peace. I felt less joy. And I remembered and realized I had forgotten who my God was. I had taken my eyes off of the big picture and had put it on these tiny things, or even put my hope in these little things that don't amount to much at the end of the day. And I was realizing it's because I had forgotten who my God is. You know, we talk about Israel and we advocate for the Jewish people, and that is so needed. But if we don't remember who our God is, and we're not starting with his standard as our standard every day of our lives and reminding ourselves, because we are such forgetful creatures, then we'll never be able to do that activism from a pure heart, from the heart that it should come from, without him. So I ask you, and I encourage you, and I challenge you to remind yourself today, who is your God? Maybe you have started to put your hope in other things, little gods, whether it's something that we prize much in America, like materialism or individualism, some selfishness, whether it's in good things like our family or our career, but maybe we've elevated them to a status they're not meant to hold, or that above God. Who is God to you? What do you need to remember who God is? You know, something that I read lately and learned was that in ancient times, a victorious king in the ancient world would have a long train. And the longer the train, basically it meant the greater his symbol of authority and rule, because a king in the past, when he would defeat another king, would tear off and cut off a part of his robe and put it onto his own robe to form a train. And basically, the longer his train, it meant the more of his authority and rule and kingdom that had been conquered was being on display. You see, Isaiah said that he saw a vision that the Lord was sitting like a king on a throne with a robe so long that its train filled the temple. My friends, this encouraged me so much. I was able to remember that our God is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the God of angel armies, the God of all the hosts of heaven. He has authority and power above all. He is a high above all. He is victorious. He is the only one worthy of all honor and glory and blessing and power to him and him alone. That is the God we serve. Why would we take our eyes off that? But maybe remember that today. I hope that encourages you, or whatever you need to remember that God is. Maybe you need to remember different names of God. You could go look up a name, or you could look up a verse to cling on to. But I challenge you today, remember who your God is. Remember that he is the one who alone is worthy, and that yes, he has a great plan and purpose for your life, but more importantly, he's called you into this kingdom building business that he has been doing from the beginning of creation towards the restoration of all things to himself. And we get to partner with him in that. So I ask you, who is your God? Remember, so that then you will know that he is the Lord.
Okay. Thank you for that, Lydia. That was valuable and greatly appreciated.
Definitely. So is that it? That's a wrap?
Yeah, that's it. That is the end of another fine episode of the Kufi Middle East Briefing Podcast. We need to abbreviate this name. It's a long name.
We need an acronym. But it was good to be back to our usual format, I'll say. It's nice to talk to somebody other than you.
Well, I mean, it's rude, but fine. But also, fair. I don't take that too personally, but yeah, it was. And we had a great guest, so that made it even better. Not that we've had non-great guests. So yeah, I think we're just really talking now for the sake of talking. So thank you for joining us. Like, subscribe, send us reviews, tell your friends. And yeah, that's a wrap. So take care. God bless. Happy Thanksgiving from me and Karina is just going to be silent for the next 10 minutes.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
That's it. You know. Jeez, Karina. All right. Take care, everyone.